Rivers.
Here.
Commissioner McFarland.
Here.
And all the other guests and staff in the room. Go ahead.
Roger Bergwell, Grand Hospital.
Tom Moore, City of North Bend.
Mike McCarty, Planner, North Bend.
Jamie Burrell, North Bend.
Leonard Jordan, Department of Ecology.
This is the planning meeting, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was looking for someone who's not here yet. Sorry. Okay.
We're just
getting started. Okay. Okay, so the we'll approve the agenda. So, second. All right. We'll look at this later on, essentially just kind of the close time of the meeting. Discuss procedures with that, but maybe let's, instead of just approving this right off the bat, like we normally do, let's just look at it and see if this is enough time for these topics and kind of review that. So I'll just say a comment that at work I run meetings, I guess kind of similar to this, maybe a little more so with fashion, but I create the agendas essentially. And so I understand that we don't do that in this process, but it's just interesting to say kind of following someone else's agenda. So that's where challenges can come about and how we kind of run late, because I'm kind of like, that's not my mindset as we're working on the topic. Like I didn't say, okay, let's stop it at 7:30, stuff like that. So maybe if we want to stay on time between 7 and 9, maybe we should just kind of look at these. And maybe tonight it's too rush for time frame to modify things, but in the future, consider that. We can see if there's more time, and we can modify the agenda if we need to, or just say, you know, we need a little more time and stuff.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, I think staff generally bases their expected time periods on past meetings and
future meetings.
What's going to happen, right?
Yeah, item number 7 there, the parks element, we're just intending that as a very brief introduction at this meeting, because we'll come back to it with a public hearing at your next meeting.
Suggested as the chair, you certainly have input on the agenda as well. So.
Sure. Yeah, just want to put that out to the commission as well. I don't have a ton of time for other duties in the world, I'm sure we all do, so sometimes it just gets down to the meeting itself. So. Sometimes we can just look at and adjust. So, just looking at this, if we want to stick to this agenda, we have 20 minutes for the floodplain management plan deliberation or recommendation, and then an hour on the critical areas ordinance, a half hour introduction, and then at 9 p.m., we would actually have to extend the meeting to talk about the extensions.
Mike put it together, but
no, it's good.
Those are informational items. We don't have to stay late to discuss those. Those are to take home. I don't think we intended to go past 9.
No, these are things that you had requested at prior meetings, so we put them on as an agenda item. If you wish to discuss them, we can. Otherwise, it's informational.
Well, I guess just looking at this, to me, it seems if we stick to these time frames, there might be a little bit of a crunch, so we'll just have to kind of look at the time. Something I haven't done in the past, so just go be mindful so we can get out of here in the time.
And we're happy to help you too.
Yep, sounds good. All right, all those in favor of approving tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye.
All right, approval of minutes for August 23rd meeting.
So moved.
Second. Any comments or changes? Last meeting's minutes?
That is a procedural question. I wasn't at the last meeting, so do I need to abstain from voting to approve the minutes? Does it matter?
Generally, you would, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't matter either way, but there's nothing that would prevent you from voting.
All right, no comments or changes? All in favor of approving the August 23rd meeting notes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are approved. We're pretty close to 7:03. Public comment on non-agenda items. Anyone
Nope.
Listening?
That's good. Absolutely. Probably at the wrong meeting.
in-person meeting starting at the senior center.
Was there? Because I drove over there and...
Well, I saw the lights on and cars there, that's...
Yeah, so maybe that's the meeting system, yeah. Awesome. Okay, wonderful, thank you.
All right, so no members of the public are going to speak, so move on to action, planning commission deliberation and recommendation on my amendments to the floor plan.
Yeah, so we put together just a summary staff report, again reflecting that the amendments are very minor in nature and just intended to bring out-of-date information up to speed for the purpose of maintaining our CRS credits, community rating system points to enable our residents here to have the discount on their flood insurance. Not a major amendment, and I can turn it over to Tom and Roger Flickendahl from Barry and Osborne to respond to your prior comments and how amendments work.
So I've got some bullet point items here I'll go through from our last meeting, just some priority points that you guys wanted to cover, so we can obviously not go through any page here. Scott had emailed some comments over yesterday. They were pretty minor. We'll get those addressed with the final version we bring to council.
Just Scott.
The yellow highlights within the document.
Did those get incorporated? I'm sorry. Were those incorporated? Because we didn't see
I can explain what they are when the time comes.
Yeah,
they're
right
there. 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Also, we have printed copies if anybody wants a printed copy right there by Scott.
Within the document that we emailed over and the hard copies we have here, the yellow highlights are changes since the last meeting. The gray highlights are commissioner comments, and I believe they're mainly Wob's comments from the email you sent, answering all those questions. Table 1.1 on page 115 shows the updated number of communities by CRS class. North Bend is class 5. I think there's just over 100 communities in that class of the
102.
Table 1.2 on page 117 shows the maximum points per scoring category, North Bend's points that we currently have, and the national average. And that was kind of the conversation we had last night about putting that in there just to kind of focus where we get the most bang for our buck in the future in terms of moving up in class. That same idea was put together on the matrix on page 10-28 in the back of here, same idea, scoring, just so we could see where we're at compared to the national average and what the maximum is, and where we can focus later. We had a little more discussion on repetitive loss properties, the 4 repetitive loss properties that we have in town, and they're kind of discussed on page 1-4 are minor. If these properties, and the discussion kind of got into, are we using local funds or federal funds to fix those properties? Not using local funds, I honestly don't know if they have used FEMA funds. I don't think it's been anything significant. If it has been, they would have had to come back through for permitting, and at that point in time, the city would have adopted flood regulations onto that, so they would have been brought up to code at that point. And then the other biggest conversation we had last night was kind of the talk, or last Planning Commission meeting was talking about kind of reorganizing the document, kind of putting the history in the appendix and bringing up the new stuff to the front of the document just to make it a little more readable. And before we do that, we have an audit in 2019 with our CRS folks. I'd like to bring that idea to them because right now the 10 chapters within the floodplain management plan are lined out with the scoring criteria with CRS, so I want to make sure they're good with that before we do that, but that comment's very well noted, and we'll take that up when we go through our audit, and maybe with the next division to this, that's when we get that. So those were the main changes from our last meeting. I didn't receive any other email comments after that meeting, so we just addressed what we heard at the meeting, and open for discussion.
Do you want me to just tell you what my two are at this point? So on really, really minor pages, 1-6 and 1-7, starts at the bottom of 1-6, the yellow highlighted. I just ask that when we talk about a date like June 22nd or July 20th, to just add the year 2018 after that. There's several years mentioned in that paragraph, just for clarification. And then the other one, maybe a little more substantive, 1-9. Under goals, text added a similar, so this is all about when the goals and objectives were set for the 2005 and 2012 FMP. And it says a similar process involving the Planning Commission used in 2018. And my comment was, I'm not sure that's exactly correct, because we did not go through a goal and objective setting process. So I was trying to think of how that could be reworded, and thought, well, maybe just the best thing to do is just eliminate that sentence. But if someone has any other great ideas for how to say it differently.
There's probably good reason to state that it came before the Planning Commission in 2018. Scott, that we did not exactly follow the same process knowingly.
Right.
We chose not to. And so maybe we just strike that word and say that the plan was reviewed by the Planning Commission in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That works for me. That was all I had.
Mr. Chair, do you want to entertain a motion for approval and then see if there's any other edits, or how do you want to
King County, they have just more clarification. They have a rating of 2. Is it just mainly their funding money? Why they're able to have a rating that low?
The county does a lot of things that really would not be feasible in an urban area to get down to that rating of 2. You guys probably recall more than me, but having to do with no development in the floodplain period, I think is one of them. So we require no development in the floodway. They go well beyond that. That's not very feasible in a downtown setting like this. A number of other provisions that I can't think of off the top of my head. But
they have a lot of, that one definitely is a lot of scoring criteria, and I think just the open space is also a large that they can reserve is another large scoring criteria that they get into.
Well, as a major coordinator of flood action activities in your emergency response center and all of those resources and everything, they probably score very high on those types of issues. And the fact that they've probably been ahead of all the cities in the mapping and flood analysis and came to that conclusion. Allow anybody to be in harm's way, and that makes it pretty easy for them to scrape it out.
Not
looking at the chart, do we get pretty good credit for our open spaces as we have a city with abundant open space?
I believe that.
We have 736 points out of 2020 maximum in that category, open space preservation. National average is 509. So I honestly haven't dug into these categories in that much detail, but
so we're above the average, we ought to get a lot more points. We've got significant open space that we spent a lot of taxpayer money to make sure we preserve.
Yeah, and there was a question that came up about relating to why some of the scores went down. Marlon.
differences between like the 2013 coordinators, flood management coordinators manual, and the 2017, and I think the prior one was 2009 or something like that, but they changed what they emphasize in scoring. And I think what it is it's a progression where they emphasize something that is lacking in most communities, and as soon as the communities catch up with that, they don't put as much importance on it. And they move on to the next item so that everybody can continue to progress towards
we didn't do anything wrong to lose points, and we didn't do anything better to gain points. It was just a scoring dispersion among the characters.
I think your chart, your 1028, is good.
You got it in your email, and I provided Dick with a hard copy because we knew that you didn't get the emails. There's also a summary in the staff report about what the nature of the amendments are in each of the chapters.
There's something else coming before us, that's the same view, so I'm not...
Again, this is a live document that's going to continue to go through changes.
Meetings on this. The last meeting was spent with with Aaron Bowie, our consultant, and Leonard, who has been great to tag along on this process with us. And so where we're at is we had just received a letter from the Snoqualmie tribe, and we all hadn't really had a chance to digest it yet. So what we included in the packet was that letter and our response. Just today, a little bit ago, we got another response from the tribe, and there's a couple things to point out, but in general, they, you know, it's a hard thing when you're asking for public comment, but then it's, you know, you continue to receive it, and they've always been great to work with. So I can highlight some of those because, like I said, I passed that out at the beginning of our meeting. The other thing I passed out that I also emailed around were some comments that we received from local property owner George Wersch, if you all are familiar. And he has a property that's affected by some of the stream buffers. And so he has voiced concern with the city before and wanted to develop his property and has run into some roadblocks. And so just wanted you to be aware of that. And in the response to the tribes, there were some major themes that we really tried to get at. One was the stream buffers, which we didn't get to in depth at our last meeting, or didn't come to a conclusion on. The second was wetland hierarchy and really focusing wetland mitigation in the upper falls, or above the falls near us, not just allowing development to get purchase credits that then go to a bank. I was thinking there was one other main theme. So stream buffers, the wetland mitigation.
Fish definition of fish.
Yeah, and I think we've addressed that, you know, adequately for the tribe's comments. And so tonight we could go through any questions or some of the responses that Aaron helped draft get your input on some of the decisions remaining. We just met with Leonard and Aaron a little this afternoon, and we're talking about how it just happens that our critical area amendments and our shoreline amendments, we're doing them at the same time. That doesn't always happen. They just aligned. And right now in our code, in the critical areas ordinance, we have all the streams, the wetlands, and then when you go to the shoreline, that repeats again. So it's a lot of code. It's it can be hard to administrate because if somebody comes in, they don't realize they're in the shoreline, so they address the critical areas code, and then they have to go back and address the shoreline code. And so we're trying to find ways to streamline it, to adopt by reference in some cases. We don't need to repeat the tree code in here. We can reference, you know, the other sections of the code. And we're going to have to do two ordinances, we think. One will be the critical area amendments. And really, we hope more than 90% of it is going to match what we want to see in the shoreline, too. They really should be close. There are some differences. And there is some ability to have a little bit more flexibility in shoreline versus critical area. There's a little bit of differences which we can talk about. And but our hope is to have them mesh together, have less code, have more references. And so you would have a critical areas ordinance, and that's really the bulk of it. That's the bulk of these regulations we've been talking about with streams and wetlands, and that would carry over into the SMP, and that's more the organization of our code that you guys don't care about. But we would bring you back. We would bring you back the SMP in a few months when the critical areas have, you know, gone through council and been approved or close to being approved. We'll bring you back the SMP and with those references to just show you kind of how that looks in a finished product, because it's tagging along a little bit behind the critical areas regulations, if that makes sense. It's confusing because there's two different things going on here at the same time. Did you have a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
you mentioned that shorelines and coastal areas are pretty much a match except for certain places. What would be, what would we expect those differences to appear?
Right. Yeah, well, Leonard, do you want to see respond where you work with a lot of jurisdictions, so where you see the differences the most?
In the provisions that protect the wetlands specifically, say the wetland stuff, that should align identically. But the administrative provisions, the common example is reasonable use exception. It's something common in GMA and critical areas ordinances throughout the state. That's not allowed in your shoreline master program. Because we in Shoreline have the variance process, a similar but different process. So the short answer is mostly in the administrative provisions. There's different permit types that have to be filed with ecology, so on the paperwork side of it, not so much the rules that affect the five types of critical areas.
One of the rules that was different, though, that we were just talking about earlier today, though, is the river buffer is actually slightly less in our critical area or our shoreline regulations than it is in our critical area regulations. Yeah. 75 feet in some of our shoreline environment designations in the shoreline master program, and 100 feet in our critical area regulations. Mm-hmm. So we were just talking about how to deal with that difference, and our initial thought is just leave the shoreline buffer alone, deal with all the other buffers in our critical area regulations in reference to that shoreline buffer in the shoreline regulations.
I applaud you guys for working very hard to try to work with the tribe on the issues that we're concerned about. You guys did a great job trying to mention what their concerns are. I'll just leave it like that. I think it's a good job to get there. This will pay off a lot more down the road as we work with the tribes.
Yeah, they're definitely good to work with. You know, there's certain things, you know, I think they really, their comment was they wanted 100-foot buffers or 110-foot buffers all across the board. That's just not really feasible for us, for existing property owners, existing platted lots and developments. You know, so it's not all easy to accomplish, but where we can address comments and have conversations. And
I would suggest any that approach is wise to take, because it suggests that there's no qualitative difference between 100 foot and 25 foot buffer. Just saying all 100 suggests there's no, there's no need to have 25 feet. That's not true yet. Type 4 water, no fish, what are you talking about? But so it makes sense to make that distinction, in my opinion. That probably is, in my opinion, that's probably an issue with the tribes. The problem is when they can easily amend it.
Yeah, the other thing, too, I went around this week and just took some pictures, if you guys are interested to see. I just haven't been out in a while. So type F gardener at Rock Creek Ridge. And this was Tuesday? It was raining. Type F, so on the other side.
So F is fish bearing.
Mm-hmm. So these in Forester Woods have, they're vested to the 25 foot buffer, and then on by behind the outlets also have 25 foot buffer.
So fish stream 25.
That's what some of these developments are vested at, but yep. The code is now 100.
Seems like a reasonable question. So, Forester Woods, great example, built in the early 90s, regulations in place there. We're seeing a nice picture. I see flowing water. I see foliage. But the concerns both the tribe expressed and certainly some of what we're trying to get at in our regulation is it still supporting habitat for, in this case, fish, and water temperature being one of those? Is there any mechanism that the city uses to do any testing, or county, state? Is there anybody ever go out there and say, what's
the county does?
25 foot buffer.
Well, I'm just thinking, regardless of where it is, you know, we're sitting here debating whether we should enlarge the buffer, or is it acceptable the way it is? What are the what would we allow trails within a buffer, and et cetera? if we never actually go back on a fully developed project, and by that I mean that's had an opportunity to, you know, fully revegetate, we don't know if we got it right or not.
One thing I can tell you with this neighborhood in particular that does not work with the 25-foot buffers is you get a lot of trees, or because it just had a 25-foot buffer, the house is very close to that buffer, or close to the creek, and people constantly call the city and say, I've got a tree that's going to fall on my house, let me go take it down. And we're not really in a position to say, no, you can't remove a hazard that could potentially damage your house.
Right.
And those are pretty decent sized lots, too.
Yeah. You wind up losing the effectiveness of that buffer over time just for that factor alone.
That's a great example. The other thing that I've observed in that particular neighborhood and others is the infestation of mullein blackberry and other invasives. And homeowners similarly, both trying to do the right thing or getting it wrong and trying to clear that out and then getting in trouble for trying, you know, because they've violated a buffer. I don't know, you know, what the answer is to that. So
in that case, the thing that we found is that subdivision was done with native growth protection easements. So the lot all the way up to the creek is actually in the person's backyard. And that's what doesn't work in that case, because they feel like it's their yard.
Right.
So now subdivisions are required to place critical areas and tracks that are separate from the lot. So it provides that extra layer of
protection. If I were a kid, we'd be in that water.
It seems like it gets a lot of shade as far as cooling benefit. And I know the county has done, I don't know about here, but Clough Creek, right nearby, there's a great amount of trout in that river, and they've documented that. And
y'all know the fish levels. That you could nail the answer, but it seems to be a lot more question.
Is that 25, though?
Right. Yeah, that would be 25. You can't see. This isn't in the neighborhood. This is right off of Ryberry Way, so it's a little more open there. This one's looking towards that commercial property, George Warsh's.
Is that engaged there?
I think it was just a post. Just a few of the other pictures, just to show you, since I was out. There's Clough Creek, right off of 415th Way. Not much buffer there. On that was, they were flowing, none were flowing crazy. This is in the Safeway parking lot. Again, this is a type F, but a little bit of ponding and not much going on there otherwise, and not as much vegetation. Not as rocky there. Here's the type C conveyance. You've all seen this. That's EJ, near EJ Roberts Park. The next picture is over here. I was just trying to kind of follow. So, again, that's a type C right next to somebody's yard, maintained for conveyance. Just got a few more. Let's see. Type F, gardener. So, on Northwest 14th Street. So, as you're coming into town, just went down. Yeah, this is, this is 8th, not 14th. And that's just right at that bridge crossing. Not really much water that I can see, a little bit in the distance.
8th Street being 8th Street. Just as you cross to the toll booth.
Right. And then this is looking the other way. That's kind of a close-up. It goes back in now. Let's see. That's also off of 8th. So that's looking towards Tollgate right here in the distance. That definitely had some more water in it. This is just, again, same area. Type F. And then back to Silver Creek. These aren't really in order. After we got through the Type C conveyance, then it goes into a Type NS, which doesn't look that much different yet. It's mowed, it's maintained, it's between two properties. This is on Ogle near the church, the Lutheran church. And then on the other side, the church actually kind of volunteer project and did some plantings. So I'm pretty sure this was to a 25-foot buffer. It's what it looked like. Not much of a
channel. So somewhere in there is...
So yeah, not much of a channel right now. I mean, I was listening even, and then I think I've got one more. Type NS again through here off of Merritt. So
my sense is that channel moves through Orgeson into Silver Creek and then
right.
toward the river, that it gradually is getting more foliage and
needs yeah.
to have water in it
mm-hmm.
more.
Right? Yeah. It's still seasonal
yeah.
in many ways, so I was surprised even with the amount of rain. I mean, there wasn't a lot of water, but even...
I know as it starts to go get to
under Ballarat.
Ballarat and under, then there's frequently water.
Yeah, I walked by there, or jogged by there just a little bit ago, and I was listening to see, because I couldn't really see the water, but how much is there? And I mean, there's not a lot yet. And that has some really... I took a picture, but I forgot to upload it, but that has some real nice big trees and
yeah.
really mature vegetation around it. Yeah.
Right now,
I'll
be about the lowest.
Yeah. So, anyways, if those are helpful, just to kind of, yeah. you guys are familiar with our water courses. But were there other thoughts or comments, or did you want to go through?
Yeah, for tonight, I'm just going to be kind of reviewing the comments received and
mm-hmm.
give you some input.
Yeah.
So we're not looking for people yet.
No, and. What we'll do is we're going to have the draft code packaged up again, and it'll just be the critical areas again, and we're going to finesse the SMP and get it buttoned up following behind the critical areas. That would be at your next meeting. If you want to make a recommendation, you can. If you need more time, but I'll have a staff report too, and the code. And if we get that done ahead of the packet going out, I'll go ahead and send it to you guys so you can start getting an early look at it. But we received comments from Commissioner Greenberg and have added those in and have addressed the tribe's comments, and I think Leonard's even gonna give us some comments to add in. And so it's just been a combination of all that in our meetings and our discussions. So
I do have one question for when it's appropriate to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you show me on a map where the Wersch property is?
Yeah. That one is right here. So as you can see,
okay.
Gardner Creek is
yeah.
coming right through. So that's about where I was probably
What's the current zoning in there?
That's interchange mixed use.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Did Mr. Wersch see the reference to the library here?
This is the managing partner, isn't that right? But maybe I'm.
No,
it is Gardner.
Yeah, he's just maybe oversight on his part there.
No, I didn't even notice that. On the CEPA documents, does it also say?
On his narrative.
I'm confused because it's
yeah.
Ryberry Way with Gardner Creek.
Here's Ryberry, and here's Gardner.
Gotcha.
So they kind of parallel each other a little bit. And then Flow Creek, which I talked about, was right here. So that's where the wedding picture was taken. Nope, that's Gardner,
okay.
his property.
I'm just asking if we're going to walk through staff's comments to the tribe letter. I just made some notes as we went through.
Sorry, right.
Let's do that then. Start off with the first bullet point. Yeah, so I appreciate, I think I'm following staff's response to the tribe comment in regard to fish habitat.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, what's the potential impact to it adapt this change? What does it really have?
In this circumstance, there would be no change because this is just the purpose section about why are we protecting critical areas.
All right. Then my second comment to that, which kind of flows then as their comments recur as mm-hmm. it goes through, is there a reason that we really need to name all of the fish species at all?
No.
I would advocate that we're much better. They're all classified. They're
yes.
all, you know, by science, right?
Yes.
So if we remain silent,
yep.
that makes
I think that
we
makes
don't
sense.
Make a mistake and miss whitefish.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. That will be the intent.
That's a good point. But on the other hand, being silent, well, fish raises problems too.
Well, I don't. What I'm trying to say, Dick, is instead of trying to make sure that we've captured every native fish species, if we're naming protect native fish species, whatever they have been identified to be by Fish and Wildlife, the appropriate body, they are included. And that way, we don't miss a fish species, and somebody can say, oh, well, that's not named, so I don't have to do that. I'm actually trying to be more inclusive.
And with that, you know, because I think that as the public reads this, when they see salmon, they say, oh, that's great, protecting the species, you know. They don't see any named
other
species.
All right.
It doesn't catch their eye as much. But we want our citizens to realize that we are protecting all fish, but if we name some of the critical ones, they get the idea.
To get in the middle here, which I actually am, the tribe on their comment just said, if the city would like to list species, mm-hmm. you can add including but not limited to.
Yeah.
But they say, to Rob's point, our concerns for all fish life, for any species in particular. So I think any of it's probably
yeah.
fine.
Why don't I ask Aaron what his recommendation is? Our consultant, you know, if he has, if there's just a few special ones he'd like to call out, and or if that's a slippery slope and it's better not, I don't have a strong opinion either way.
And what I, to kind of playing off of your words here, Skip, why I wouldn't want us to inadvertently be protecting a non-native that actually is a problem
mm-hmm.
for our native species, right? If it, you know, mine, and I don't know what that would be for our area, but my analogy might be if we said, hey, protect all blackberry bushes, that wouldn't be a good thing.
GMA does call for extra protection of
salmon.
For
right.
that reason, it
right.
might be worth at least calling that out.
Well, I think, yeah, I should have clarified, I was not referencing the salmonoid streams in reference.
Right.
It was the non-salmon.
Like to hear what Aaron says and see what the cities are doing, but I in the past I've always advocated for doing the including but not limited to
mm-hmm.
just to hit Commissioner Ryan's point, which is it gives the public who's trying to figure out what are we doing
yeah.
some idea
mm-hmm.
of what we're doing, and it also gives staff an ability to say, well,
mm-hmm.
just because a fish isn't listed, it's not an exclusive list.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying, so
great.
I would be in favor of that.
Okay.
Anything else? This page?
I guess my comment, and this is a response to 1405-030C.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, do we have any sense of properties that might impact?
Yeah. I had a question back to Aaron about this, saying 300 seems like a lot, and could the threshold be, you know, if they have a report and they've demonstrated they're outside of the critical area and outside of the critical area buffer, then I think it's not an issue anymore. They're not having to meet the code. But what is this? This is for sufficient information.
And we also need some discretion based on the nature and scale of the project. If somebody's just adding a deck to the back of their house, that's a whole different story than if they're wanting to put in a big parking lot and stormwater outfall.
Right.
Proportionality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I asked him for that clarification.
Could you simply just say the director, I'm not sure what the term is, the director or the staff or whatever the right term is, may require a critical air review if it's within 300 feet?
Yeah, I think that was the intent of his comment, and I was questioning, does it need to be 300? He suggested that because Duval's buffers go up to a maximum of that wide. Again, if you have a deck or something small that's 300 feet away, that's a long ways. So that's a lot. Yeah. So
when I worked for City of Urien, we did the same thing, but we did 100 feet.
Yeah.
And okay. we prepared what we call our red flag map, which showed, I think the color was actually orange, but we took all the buffers and did like a 100-foot buffer around the buffer to in orange. So that was just basically to let the public and the staff know if you're within either the buffer area or this orange area, you may have some additional work you need to do. That's all it was. It wasn't a regulatory map in that sense.
Yeah.
But I think 100 feels better to me.
Yeah. Especially on a smaller lot or something.
The fact of the matter is, if it's a large piece of property, there are going to be studies done anyways, or at least surveys done that might indicate that there's a wetland there maybe you didn't know about. Regardless of whether it's within 100 feet of another buffer.
Right.
So. And like Mike's point, I mean, I might be on a property that's only 350 feet deep. My house is on the front of it, but I can't step outside the back door and not be within 300 feet.
Right.
Okay. We'll get that buttoned up.
Thresholds better.
Is the Mason County case new?
That was presented at, I know it just at least something that I attended as a kind of a new recommended approach to help narrow down that the kind of the unknowns of reasonable use exceptions and variances. So here's a little bit more criteria rather than just give me anything.
Yeah, and he did make a note that we could consider whether that baseline could be refined. You know, could we also talk about a percent intrusion or impact into the critical area buffer? I thought that was a good idea. Haven't had a chance to talk with him more about that, but I can. That was one of my comments to him. Was just what would that be, and maybe that's a valuable tool as well. So.
And obviously, you're going to get city attorney. This question too, because it's really more of a legal question.
Yeah.
think that maybe where B would be in this is the second bullet that
right.
B is missing, but it could be that A would be number one, okay. And then the second bullet would be two, and then number three would be the next bullet, which is basically off-site.
Yeah, okay.
Or and even off area.
I agree with you, and I think this is definitely getting at what mm-hmm. at least several of us spoke to is what's bringing it home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is innovative mitigation something that you came up with, or did you find someone else that
term? That term, or does it show? Oh,
yeah. I think that's kind of a middle ground.
Right. Term. I believe there is a definition for that.
It's a common term, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Well,
I'll be on site in kind or a mitigation bank if you're creative and have cash.
If we put that in the code, we will define it. I don't know if that was more of his.
Well, by definition, creative means
right.
come up with something. It's only so far you want to define it.
Right.
Leave some line.
Yeah.
As those that hierarchy flows into the next page,
mm-hmm.
I had a question or a potential suggestion where there's the number one and it says there are no regional mm-hmm. opportunities on or off site within city or urban growth area.
Mm-hmm.
In a hierarchy level, I'm thinking for the upper valley. Mm-hmm. So. First, of course, we want it in the city or within the urban growth, or at least within the upper valley. And only then, look outside.
And I think what I saw, I think you have all the sentences and the words in here, which sometimes is harder than just a simple bulleted list. But I think that to make it a little more concise, like what I saw in Kirkland, and I said it at the other meeting was basically location written down, but mitigation purpose order or something like that. And number one, on site in kind. Two, off site in city in kind. And three, off site in kind within upper watershed or something.
Yeah.
So if we can just clean that up a little bit, I don't know if it's clear when you read it, because it. It goes into A, and it's not clear that on-site in kind is number one.
I'll defer to Leonard on that. He knows more than me, but I would suggest that that may not be the best approach. I think what I've heard has been found over time is that on-site mitigation tends to fail because it's not being properly managed. So you get a developer that's interested to build homes. Their focus is getting the homes built, moving on. And so it becomes this struggle for the city to go back to the developer and say, no, you got to finish this mitigation. They're out to other things. They're not focused on it. And it gets languished.
It's not a core permit that's required.
There is, but because the it's kind of the burden is on the city to make sure that it happens rather than the developer wanting to make it happen.
Well, even after that period, I think as it passes then to the homeowners association, you've still got now you have truly laymen in charge who are not likely to understand the science and probably even gets harder. At least during the development phase, they have the professional to try and get you there.
Yeah. So the alternative then is being an off-site mitigation bank type of approach where it's actually somebody whose focus, professional focus, is to make this mitigation work. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly out there monitoring and watering. And
is that like a simple
yeah.
We talked about that the last meeting, that yes, you can do that, you can do business in that. That's totally out of our area.
Yeah, so I think the hope would be to have some kind of satellite office of that or some other company that would start up doing something.
That's a stretch, it sounds like. That's going to happen. I guess, is there a way, or I thought that this was the way where the wetland requirement occurs because that not apply? And I don't understand how the city would have to be the...
It does, but it always winds up being the city is the driver on that. The developer truly is not interested.
And I think the core, all of us have learned from experiences, like saying mitigation on-site in kind by the homeowner often doesn't work. I think it's preferred because it starts with avoidance and then works into it, but time has taught us that banks work better. At least that's the core's opinion. I'm not sure I agree with it, but that's where the thinking has certainly shifted. It not too many years ago.
Homeownership
was on-site and in kind. That was your only choice.
As you change your homeowners in a community, they have less and less interest in the historical development of the property.
Yeah.
You know,
and sometimes just awareness. You know, what we might classify as a wetland area because of species and things identified, they might just see as a depression in their property and plow it under. So it's, you know, that's probably the kind of thing that the core is addressing.
I'd maybe here suggest not prioritizing it, because the city could look at it one way, the core could change next year as to how they look at it. So mitigation, if it works, can be on-site in kind, it can be in a bank, creative or otherwise, as long as it works.
It's got your feel. I mean, in my naive mind, the best middle ground was if we're concentrating the mitigation here in the valley, here in our city limits, not necessarily on the property, but we're feeling that that's probably too hard, that the staff feeling that that's a bar you can't get to? Or?
Well, I completely agree that it should be in the same basin, so we should be doing something in the Upper Snoqualmie Valley to mitigate the impacts to wetlands in the Upper Snoqualmie Valley. But my thought is not necessarily prioritize on-site, because there's potential for something at Meadowbrook Farm or some other thing that you could collectively do that somebody can have their eyes on a little bit more. Maybe we work with Mountain Sand Greenway Trust or something.
Well, that's kind of that's what I'm kind of saying. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the vision in my head, is we have so many opportunities with the Tollgate property, with the Meadowbrook properties, or potentially others, where there may be a significant wetland or area that needs restoration already, that would be much more beneficial overall versus trying to preserve a smaller one. If that's, you know, so I'd like to see that happen over the purchase and the ownership.
And I think this supports that, and, you know, this doesn't have the same teeth, but you're not pigeonholed then into something that isn't going to work as well. So I think it's an improvement to what we have in the code now, and it's helping to clarify the goals and the prioritization.
Is the 50 to 60 65 for the perennial fish and then 50 for the fish seedlings, I guess.
It's pretty close. I was going to propose we just adopt the King County, which is the only variance there really is a little bit higher on the non-fish, the seasonal, excuse me. And in conjunction with what flows into the next page, the discussion about the feasible reduction, which made a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and I have to read this again, but I think we've also talked about, because I didn't know where you guys would land on wanting to increase buffers. Like we talked about, it can create a hardship for existing lots that are just wanting to add on or whatnot. So I think we could apply, we can talk to Aaron, and he seemed to support it. We could apply this increased buffer to infill or new development sites.
Well, I guess what I was suggesting is that while we're increasing the buffers, which I think is a good idea, and I get how maybe it's a little more extreme on the NS type, but if it's in conjunction with kind of the discussion that you provided in the following page on that gives allowance for why would you force somebody back 65 feet if the two adjoining properties are at 25 feet and your entire width is, let's say 50 feet, that would be insane. So,
for me, I would rather have buffers that we're comfortable not changing and not have a reduction of flexibility and just give the buffer away. Why would someone not reduce?
Well, it's not their necessarily the choice, it's still the staff choice. So I guess what I'm describing is, under that argument, I would feel like, well, then I would want to hold it down to the 25. Because I'm thinking, literally, if I had a row of lots, 50-foot wide lots, running along this NS street, and ones on both sides had previously developed under the old code of 25 feet, and I have that center lot, this 50-foot lot, 120 feet deep, it would tell you, well, okay, even though they're at 25, we're going to make you go back to 65.
We have to start moving forward at some point.
I think that's an unreasonable thing. That's just, and certainly doesn't apply across the board because you wouldn't take it in a, say, a 10-acre piece. That would be a whole different conversation to me.
Do you have reductions or amount? You have everything here as far as this table. I see it. I see the numbers, but the reductions are.
We were just talking about that earlier today, that right now the code, our existing code does allow buffer reduction. It's a very complicated thing that you have to have demonstration of no loss of ecological function. And so in that case, you wind up getting critical area consultants hired to demonstrate that, and you have another critical area consultant that disputes that. It's kind of this back and forth of science. An alternative that we were talking about today would be to establish a stronger buffer for an lesser buffer, actually, for an intact vegetated area. So if you've got the mature vegetation, you have a 25-foot buffer, for example. If you don't, the buffer is greater, and you have the opportunity to reduce that back subject to restoration or enhancement. So it's a way to get smaller, but also to increase the ecological function.
Actually, get some.
Well, yeah, my question was just with the other cities.
This one came from Tukwila, the one that he added in here. I don't know, I don't think it always is.
I don't know what Tukwila has here as far as their...
Right. I don't know.
I know there's a lot of information.
Right.
The more, it can get
pretty
time-consuming. Yeah. But I guess it's just...
That was the example that he liked, and he did not mention that these other cities necessarily had that same. The tribe commented that they would only recommend reduce buffer by 25%. You know, we have 50 in here, which was highlighted to discuss.
Yeah, I think this 50%, for example, that would bring like the fish down currently to about 50. So that's what struck me, especially was that that's an extreme, just like the non-fish, for example.
Yeah.
Because remember, if we're talking, okay, well, a seasonal non-fish, you know, we're not
right.
as concerned here, but
right.
then if there, this would be any stream.
That's true, and you could, we might want to just limit it to the type.
So maybe limit it to
the type ends.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah,
I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
Likely to be in this situation in the stream.
I know that the situation that, that the developer of the hotel that is in fish stream, so that's one where
oh,
that's
yes.
not where I'm at, just informally on that, is that I don't want to reduce it. I just feel like on certain situations, you know, that's the land that you purchase, that's a fish stream, so I'm sorry that that's a situation, but you know, that's what it is. It's a harsh reality.
But I guess the argument there is the benefit of you've got 25 all along, and then you're supposed to have 100 and then 25 all along. So the what benefit are you going to get for that short amount of stream distance by increasing the buffer?
Is that also, is that Worsh's argument?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If we do that there, it applies everywhere. If we do it to only that property, maybe, I guess. Right? But
I think that's a tough one because it kind of does go back to the point I was trying to make.
Ecological benefit.
Do we get right? Do we, or can we really realize an ecological benefit in a very short run? If
right.
it's, if this is, if you're at a fully developed state on either side, is what I was trying to think.
So, and Worsh's plot isn't a good example of that, though, right? We have some F stream. With 25-foot buffers on the Forest Woods and on
mm-hmm.
the bridge side,
mm-hmm.
that we're not going to say it's 115 or 110.
Mm-hmm.
A very concrete example of that, though, is if you go down to the end of Maine here and you get to the end where it turns around along the river, there's one vacant lot there with condos on
yes.
either side of it.
Yeah.
So if a development were built today, it would have a 100-foot buffer, which would
right.
push that condo out a lot further than the rest of it.
Probably maybe not buildable. It's not a very deep
no.
one. Yeah.
So maybe they're... Well, let me ask a question. As I'm recalling from the draft CAO,
mm-hmm.
there's a variance procedure still proposed
mm-hmm.
plus the RUE.
Mm-hmm.
Would the variance process be something that, in that situation, that lot owner could use to reduce the buffer?
And the F stream is essentially the shoreline stream.
Yeah. So then we get shoreline regulations too, potentially applying. So even if we granted a variance, then there's the whole issue of maybe needing a variance or ecology.
Well, it's either going to be in shoreline or out. Shoreline,
that,
from
that's
what I'm hearing, it has to be. The buffers are a little squishier. There's often more ways to give that applicant relief, if it makes sense, if you could demonstrate no net loss. I look at it, buffers are drawn with a broad sword. Sometimes it's good to have a scalpel to do the fine work. Otherwise, you get these cases where you have an empty lot with houses either side of you, your buffer's way behind it. It's called a
typically used on lakes, started in like Washington 40 years ago, but it's the idea of fairness.
Right.
Not so much environmental or ecological protection, but I got to do
it. Well, I see it applied in setbacks as well in the same sense, right? Is that if I'm looking at Puget Sound and I've got two houses built at 25 feet off the shore, but the new setback is 100, that's an unfair burden. So you get, what's it called? They basically do a line from the corners of the two beside you, and you can build to that line.
But I think the difference between like a front yard setback and what we're talking about here is this is tied closely to GMA, best available science, and habitat.
And if I may, to your point, estimates based on all that plus existing land use and proposed land use. So you're taking into account that lot down there is behind the levee next to a road already built out. That's the difference between shoreline and sea level.
And no net loss, right? Is that correct? For
no net loss is a stronger idea of shoreline. It's certainly applies in critical area.
Yeah.
So you're saying that even if in the shoreline code you have a 200-foot of shoreline jurisdiction, 100-foot buffer, they can go through, do this reasonable use exception? And
not that. It's a different terminology.
The
common line. Setback.
Okay.
An administrative reduction of a buffer.
Okay.
A dimensional standard of some sort.
Is that through shoreline conditional use or a variance?
A little bit of latitude to the local jurisdiction, at least in SDP. It has to be one of the three types of shoreline permits.
Mm-hmm.
SDP. Mm-hmm. Some of them will step it up to a CUP because then that gives ecology the final say and raises the bar a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
There's some options there within shoreline.
Well, that's good to hear for that property, for instance. I mean, there's options.
Can I make a suggestion? This sounds like we have a few different thoughts going on. I think we're all pretty close. It's those of us who have given opinions. Just have the staff come back with some options for us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe on a hierarchy of, here's how you can be the most lenient, and here's how you can be the most strict. And here's some other, maybe one or two other options in there. But I think, especially if we're going to be talking about having some flexibility for the F-type streams that are also in the shoreline jurisdiction, I think it's probably important to understand how that all interrelates. Not that I want to be looking at the whole shoreline code, but just in these situations, what does shoreline say? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, did I hear though that the variation in the stream buffer width, you only want to apply what we're looking at here to the type N.
I think that's
right. And shoreline has its own set of rules and such, and when we get those amendments ready, we'll make sure they're clear in the code and the process for getting that approval is clear. So I guess we're back to buffers and where people feel like they want to recommend what the consensus is. Do we want to increase and by how much? And
I think that we could go as pretty close to what I originally suggested with King County's current, and then allowing reduction for the type N streams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was 25 or 50. Yeah.
I think so. Leave it to them to give us one, but that front portion, I'm with you on that.
I kind of like the idea of the 25 and 50 for the two types of edges. Maybe a 25% reduction for the larger one, and 50 for the small one.
At 25 in my mind, but I think that 50 would be
seasonal. I don't know if that's getting too specific in here, but that's...
So you said it for that type NS? You would support a 50% reduction, and the type NP, which really, if you've looked at the map, we only have a few little blurbs, and two of them are out. They're out. One's in city limits, I guess one is out. Right. You want to limit those to 25%, the NP? Okay.
And a no reduction on the fish.
Okay.
Is there a consensus on that?
Okay.
I think what might be easier if I just did the math. Could you just put hard numbers in there? So say, for example, on the NP,
right,
if we have 65-foot buffer, right, that it could be reduced down to 50 feet.
So 50 to 65, and then we could reference that
the
depending
ones,
on.
The NS would be 50 down to 25, potentially, correct?
So
we're using single 65.
Yeah, I was going to say the King County
65.
So
okay.
Be 30.
Okay. All right, got it. I just had a wrong number.
I mean, that's probably easier.
Yeah.
It's the same. Yeah.
So if you get the reduction, you're going up by 6 feet or something. 33. So 8 feet.
So Leonard, with the reduction allowance, is it possible to do a simple degraded stream buffer as can reduce, or can... Yeah, degraded stream buffers can allow reduction subject to mitigation without getting into the whole complicated, you've got to demonstrate your net loss of ecological function.
It's a concept that's always in play. Demonstrating it is always difficult, but to your question, by all means, that's common, because most buffers are degraded to some extent, so if we can reduce them, or at least draw the line, mm-hmm. the environment gets one side, the applicant gets the other. That often provides that ecological lift that we're looking for and accommodates the proposed development.
Yeah. I'm just looking for, from the user perspective, simple to understand, simple to administer, rather than have to hire
a consultant. It seems popular, at least with applicants, you know, because they get it. Oh, okay, I'll protect this area.
Mm-hmm. I'm making it better than it was.
Yeah. The ownership and mitigation back to the on-site in kind, if you get it, really care.
And I think we need to keep in mind that while a lot of our focus needs to be on the larger developer, the professional development company, we can sometimes concern ourselves with how they care. We've got to keep in mind that we're also talking about just a single lot owner or a couple of guys, and they may indeed care. They may have been here longer than any of us, and we just want to make sure that they can do something and not violate it, and we'll stay there and enhance.
Mm-hmm. So is this a good time to talk about wishes then? Is as an example with an F?
Right, and that's where I think Leonard helped try to explain it to me a little bit, where that is a shoreline jurisdiction. So the, you know, here we're in critical areas. If we stay with where we're at with stream buffers and shoreline, and then you have the buffer reduction opportunity and approvals. I mean, it's possible he could get down. I don't know if he'd get down to 25, but he.
I don't know the specifics.
Yeah.
To be clear, your S&P would have to allow these common line setback
right.
reductions.
Right. So in the S&P, I think we'll add. I think the S&P is going to more address his comments.
Perfect.
Just to make sure I understand.
The MD&S he provided is old, and this has been, but he recently sent comments to Lynn and has been wanting and actively trying to develop,
to move
his project forward, and
okay.
So he knew we were doing these amendments and
okay.
wanted to provide that as context and that he still has issues with.
Right.
Why is that shoreline?
Type F, all type F are shorelines of the state. So I actually think that can help him. And thinking about it from that perspective, it's
yeah,
just he needs.
Mm-hmm. Is it override?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So what we do here?
For the shoreline piece of it, it will. And so. We'll draft that as the shoreline follows the critical area amendments.
I think what you're saying is we're going to get a crack at that
yes.
next. So
yeah.
We can still
So should that be referenced here then, if it doesn't really have any say anyway?
Well, there's type F streams that are in, or no, are all type F in shoreline jurisdiction? Or it's just when it's over a certain CFS?
Mm-hmm. If it isn't, if this doesn't have any part here, then maybe just a reference saying,
yep.
This is the wrong section, go here and look
at it. Yeah, isn't
it the S? Well, no, so we looked at this, when I looked at this before, S was only the middle, the south.
Right, yeah, so that's exclusively shoreline.
So then
and then type F stream, I think, is in shoreline jurisdiction only when it's over a certain cubic feet per second.
Yeah, this is.
Oh, so Gardner was
there is parts of that.
Yeah. Or going back to that.
There's our shoreline map. It's not. So it is okay. Here. It is. We're here. I mean, it's here. So it's not a shoreline of the state.
Okay.
So we need to address it here. We're back to that.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, you can see our shoreline map properties.
So any property that touches like the south corner,
mm-hmm. And with okay. 200 feet on either side of ordinary water. Yep. So
it needs to be addressed. So then, do we need to reevaluate the no reduction or anything like that?
That was my point earlier. That set these out really long. I don't like to change code.
No. My point of view, at least, you know, especially this is a good example. Yes, it's one lot, but it's a good example, especially in the pictures that you saw. You know, that exact creek with the 25-foot buffer, it's looking pretty decent. Right, it's a 25 that goes up to that lot. Mm-hmm. Seemed to do pretty well for it. 110 seems like a very large increase to me, or 100, whatever we ended up with. That seems like a very large increase. Just something that we see at 25 doing pretty decent.
So you saw that flow of the perfect water.
Right.
Go back there. Go back.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware of the area, and I know the creek. It's just a 25 seemed to do pretty decent. At 110 just seems like a large increase to me. And especially if we say you don't get a chance at a buffer. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, we're really talking 50.
Yeah, and I would argue that you don't even need to increase them. I think 100 is plenty.
Without a reduction?
Yeah, especially if you don't have a reduction.
Question, is this the only stream that is a type F and not in the shoreline jurisdiction?
Probably
also. We're talking about one property. Are there other right. properties in this sort of life? And
so
how widespread is that?
For East Garden, you have to be outside.
All the check outs.
But which one's probably not that for you?
Also, a little bit of Rinder. Well, it's on the average.
That's really here. It's Gardner and Rinder.
And then parts of Silver Creek.
Again, most of that's open space.
We have F. So.
There's a little bit, yeah. Most of this is in open space, and that's the tollgate bookend, and then you get to that little bit there that does back up to residential property.
So the east of Ballarat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the part that's in Tollgate Farms Forest.
Yeah, look at it right there. So you could, that's a good point, you could say type F outside of shoreline jurisdiction.
Right.
That limits it. A lot of that, the Gardner and Ryberry, a lot of it's in public ownership or protection.
Or just outside city limits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if this.
I guess right. When I'm looking at the map, I think there is, I mean, the way I read it, there's not F east of Ballarat.
Yes, west of that.
Which is all in public ownership.
Looks like there's a few of the backs of lots there, right?
It might be too hard not to do something with just one lot at this point. There's so little.
Yeah. I don't even think you need to say type F not in shoreline because this is the critical area code, so type F. So we're back to that. You know, I like that it says case by case basis only when the buffer is degraded and only when immediately adjacent legally established existing developments provide repair or buffer that is below the standard width. And then you still have to meet that other criteria. And you still have to demonstrate no direct, indirect, or long-term adverse impacts.
There are other species, too. Amphibians and birds and a lot of other species that can use that additional. I don't know. In one way, because we don't have a lot of streams, I don't know, it's going to be more inclined to have more protected we have.
Are you abstaining?
Help us out here.
Well, I don't know if I can be helpful. I think what, for me, I'm still not quite making the connection between the numbers that we're kind of throwing out and the actual streams in these categories and then relative to the properties that would be affected. So, you know, what I don't want to do is just pick a number because somebody else picked the number. I also don't want to do something in a vacuum that has broader effects because we've only been talking about two pieces of property. If there's a way, and I know we're going to continue the discussion, but if there's a way to connect those three dots between the proposed numbers, the buffers, the reduction opportunities, four dots, the reduction opportunities, the stream and categories, and then to the extent we can do a parcel assessment to see, you know, where are those impacts, where are those potential takings, where does it just not even make sense? Like, to your example, if you put something in place, and from a practical standpoint, we really don't benefit from what we just put in place, which is defeating the purpose of what we're trying to do here. So, not helpful for the discussion tonight, but it would be helpful for me in ultimately making a decision. I don't think I could just vote on anything that seemed like a number that was just sort of.
Could staff tell me if it's not, would it be helpful if we pull up the King County parcel view so that we can zoom in? In a particular spot in relationship to a question about here's a stream.
I think
so
we can
zoom into that area because then you've got a measuring tool. You can say, okay, here's that parcel related to this stream. What's the depth or the width of this? Here's an example of how that would impact it.
I think really the only area that's going to have a potential impact from this is going to be Silver Creek neighborhood. Because otherwise, Bradbury Creek and Gardner Creek, those areas coming down the hill are already developed. And then once you get onto the flats, the rest of the city to the east really doesn't have a lot of creeks running through it. There's a couple of type C water courses, but not regulated as buffered streams. So if we zoom in on the Silver Creek neighborhood, so Nintendo has said that they're not interested. At some point, something's going to happen.
We do have a lot of development potential around here, for sure.
Right.
We have our own thoughts of taking the road off through there. Are we going to hold ourselves to these standards?
In that case, that's Oh, the, I guess the creek is.
As well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's outside of the city limits right now, correct?
No, that's in city limits.
This is EP. That's all. That's EP zone.
So, yeah, this isn't on an aerial, so I don't know if the buffer is here.
Yep, so it's 100.
Or if, yes.
Yeah, it'd be 100.
If we could change this and allow guests just to let that hotel go there and have a 50% reduction, kept it 100, allow a 50% reduction, why? Everything's about the same. So, if these became built out for the large developments, it could get crunched. Mm-hmm. That's what's,
yeah, that's
what's tricky, bro.
Yeah. I think the reduction ability for Silver Creek, I think it would be hard to sell these properties in Silver Creek, and we're increasing their buffers, you know, 40 feet, 20 feet on either side. That's a big impact. But with the variation allowance, I think that gets us, it makes it more palatable while still and really highlighting that range of buffers. So I think we're good there with kind of what we have proposed. It's really, yeah, down to this type F 100 foot.
Non-shoreline type F.
Right.
Right, and that EP zone is going to be shoreline, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
It's a tough decision, yeah. Where avoidance is not possible, this is our variance language.
One of the things that occurred to me is, Mike, saying some of that, but what I was pointing at is that what we're also not seeing in these maps is the overlay of floodplain and the overlay of flood zone as well. So, 100 yeah, so those have factors that also either limit or eliminate.
Yeah, I would say, I know a few meetings ago I handed out those 11 by 17, you know, just take a little time just kind of looking at the map, thinking about it between now and then. I'll get some of Aaron's thoughts on at least the type F and say we weren't really sure, you know, at this point we wanted to allow that variation, even though we know those comments have been received, and there's definitely... I think the city would like to see something happen on that property in particular. But yeah, it has the domino effect of if you allow one to do it, everybody else will take advantage of that. So something to be aware of. Better be mindful of our time.
Yeah.
And,
I just want to throw one thing in. Yeah, I know. Under the chart we've been looking at, there's a highlighted paragraph I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be considering best available science.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me says we shouldn't be that concerned about whether a large development can go in on a piece of property. I understand that that is a concern if you're an economic development manager,
mm-hmm.
for example, or maybe the city council or for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But really we need to focus on best available science, which says 110 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my starting point.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do allow any sort of reduction from the 110 feet, I think it should be what is best available science tell us,
right,
that would work and still provide the different habitat values, functions and values that we want to achieve with these kinds of streams. So I don't have an answer to that offhand, but I think that would be sort of my measuring stick when this comes back.
Yeah, and this section of the variance that I have pulled up on number 8 really gets to maybe the issue of the worst property where there's relative rights and privileges permitted to other properties in the vicinity. It has constraints. So there might be a way out that like they can demonstrate through critical area studies. How did everybody else feel on going from 100 to 110? Was that general support there for that? Okay.
I'm a definite maybe.
mostly 110, yeah. Okay.
No, I'm still
trying to decide if making a change is worth the 10 feet.
I kind of agree too. I'm not a scientific one, so it's hard for me. Yeah, you're like, is it going to make a difference?
Right.
It's what the best available science is telling us, but it's another 10 feet on either side.
Right.
Well, that's what, yeah, I think just Chris remember points out that if, so you can take it as you will. Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined, I'm not voting this tonight, but to have 100 or 110 foot buffer for fifth without a reduction and move to council and they can decide. They always remember that they can change all of this. A lot of times they don't, actually, I've seen, but they could, and they could hear what the side of the business and say, hey, we're going to do a reduction, whatever. So
I think that but in our work, the more thorough and the sounder we are in our reasoning, and I do know the council listens to these meetings, listens to staff's report on reasons and reads this, the more inclined they are to accept that we've done our job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I should just say that, and I'm not a scientist, but best available science is being applied across a really large scale.
Right.
So if you are at 50 feet going to 110, it is much more substantial than if you're already at 100. So what best available science doesn't really seem to address, at least that I've been able to discern, is that incremental difference in going from 10 feet, about 100 feet to 110. And so is this the time to, because best available science is going to continue to evolve, at least right now I'm of the mind to leave it at 100 and let the science evolve and go address some of the larger gap areas where there might actually be more demonstrated benefit to making a change. So.
Yeah, and I'll ask Aaron about that too, really. If you could give us some bullets of what was the 10 foot, what was, why was that the magical number, you know, that would help justify it.
I feel better about understanding that.
Yeah.
One clarification. I know one thing that I think of is the impervious surfaces. There's a lot of that. Building one is going to have the available stream channel.
The only other thing on critical areas was there was some talk about trail allowances, and our response was, well, sometimes they are necessary. We put some in on open space parks, and sometimes you have to cross a wetland, and that could be an educational benefit. The tribe commented back, well, yes, but it's still the human interaction. People bring dogs, and there's an impact. So I think our preference is still that it's allowed in, you know, certain circumstances.
We do have a lot of future trails that we do want to do that go across streams and wetlands. It's pretty
unavoidable. Yeah, so, you know, the tribe said, well, if it's educational, you know, if there's educational opportunities, they thought that was definitely a bonus. I mean, we can add something in like that. So we'll kind of refine that a little bit, but that was the discussion about the trails. And I think that was, that wrapped it up. Did you know?
I'll be here through the rest of the process, as you know. And we'll be in touch.
Yeah, if you have comments on that.
Let's think about talking next week.
Okay. Sounds good. Good job.
Thank you.
Good night.
I was just going to say, the trails, I think it's good to get people out.
Yeah.
So you don't want to, like, trash an area, but I think it's close to the trees.
Yeah. The longer longer-term education and advocacy of being familiar and loving the space is even more important than what other people like.
Interpretive signs are appropriate so people understand why is this important.
If you don't interact with it, you don't appreciate it.
All right, the next one. So the parks element. We've got in our parks element our 20-year capital facilities program, which is our ultimate dream list, I think, that we want to do if money were no object. And then we take that 20-year capital facilities program and turn it into our 6-year prioritized capital facilities plan. And that's where we try to match up reasonably anticipated funding sources and grants and bonds, et cetera, and say this is what we truly anticipate doing in the next 6 years. So the Parks Commission has spent three or four meetings on this, trying to prioritize both the improvements on the 20-year list and the 6-year list. On that 20-year list, their focus was responding to a lot of public comment that we've received over the last couple of years via a number of different input sources. We had a Parks Commission booth at the North Bend Farmers Market last summer. We did a 2015 survey of all residents in the city, an electronic survey, and got back a lot of feedback. And then SideView in 2016 or 2017 also did a survey of the residents within the park district. And so the Parks Commission was looking at what were the responses from the public, what do they really want to see in terms of parks, and tried to relate that to what's both on the 20-year list and the 6-year list. The thing that they heard primarily was trails. The public really wants walking and biking trails. They want general open space areas, and another high priority that we saw was they want a splash park, a little kiddie park that has got water interaction in the summertime. And so that's what they provided on these lists. So if you look at the 20-year capital facilities program, you'll see a lot of red strikeout. That's a good thing. All those strikeout projects have now been completed since the last time of our last update, so it shows a lot of progress. We've been using our park impact fee revenue and making things happen. Things that you'll see in the yellow highlight is just a temporary thing to show you as you're reviewing it. Those are projects that are on the proposed bond being put out by the SideView Metropolitan Park District. So that's going to go out to voters in November, and we have great hopes that that will pass, reflecting their record. Presuming that it passes, what the proposal is the city's going to contribute 46% of the park impact fee revenue toward the cost of that, or the 46% of the cost of that project will be contributed by city park impact fee revenue, and the remainder will be covered by the SideView bond. So the Parks Commission really wanted to prioritize those projects on that bond to make sure they're on both our 20-year list and our 6-year list. So that's why you'll see a lot of those yellow projects on that list. Just a few other things to note. Other projects that we put on, some of them are not on the SideView bond, but we do know that there are pending grant funding coming to some of those, and then also some are just high priorities based on the public input. So I wanted to open it up to you guys. Just recognize the time, just like council should recognize the time that you guys spend working through things, we ask that you also consider the valuable time that the Parks Commission is considering.
And then you have a hearing at the next
meeting? Yeah, so the next meeting with you guys will be actually a joint hearing that we invite the Parks Commission to be a part of, too, so we can hear from the public formally about the list before moving on to council.
So, Mike, yeah, when you last reviewed this planning commission, which you did at this point, the whole Chapter 8, is that it?
Yeah, Parks. Yeah, so this is very similar to what we did a year ago.
This is an amendment to it.
Yeah.
Updating projects that are completed.
Yeah, we did a more minor amendment a year ago, and that was to bring on specifically the tenant trailhead park, because to use park impact fee revenue to acquire that, it needed to be on the list, so we brought that through. Now we've gone through and done a more thorough update. one other thing I didn't mention is we spent a lot more time looking at our cost estimates, and a lot of the cost estimates for projects on here were 10 years old, way out of date, undervalued, so we brought that up, reflecting more current construction costs.
I'd like to see that entire paragraph on page 2.
On the staff report?
Page 2
of the staff report.
The paragraph under the planning commission. That entire paragraph is so offensive to me, I can't speak straight.
So, what is offensive about it?
You're telling us that the Parks Commission is basically unquestionable.
No, absolutely not.
They are.
So,
they are. I don't have to. I don't have to have facts and data to criticize the plan.
We are asking for your recommendation as well. But what we're asking is that you recognize the time that they put into evaluating the plan.
We all put in our time. We don't put anything like this in our documents. That's ridiculous.
It's a little confusing, I will say, because we did spend a lot of time updating on the original element. This is just a reminder that maybe that's what you mean. But then,
let me take a stab. I recognize that what staff's trying to do is say, hey, there were 7 other commissioners that already looked at this, spent a lot of time on it. Value that work. I did catch also on a little bit of the wording that made it feel like, so don't take too close of a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand where there could be a little offense taken, but I guess maybe having served on the Parks Commission, I've got a little bit more sympathy for giving some deference. This doesn't read well in the public eye, the public effect. So I think we need to. It does not read well. It reads very autocratic. And to handcuff one commission from commenting on another commission's work is.
I apologize. I don't mean it to sound that way at all. I'm just asking that if you guys want to differ significantly from the Parks Commission's recommendation, that you provide findings about why that differs. So I think that's just as you make your recommendations to the council. If
I think may I suggest that the better course in this instance is let us work through our portion of the work, and that's going to tell you how that paragraph needs to be rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when this report becomes the Planning Commission recommendation, that the way that's written right now isn't appropriate because it's a direction to the Planning Commission from staff.
Right.
So I think that would need to be rewritten, exactly what you said, to reflect what we've done rather than in
bullet points highlighting your input. Or
yeah,
your
exactly. So I would expect that paragraph to change anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's why, that's my opinion.
Okay.
So. Good. 2 comments. It says, I'm just flipped straight to the table because I find that easier to look at context. The one overarching comment that I'm making and seeing, it's not a criticism at all, but I do feel that our good partner beside the Park District, there's a lot of difference shown now in the city's park plan for Sideview Park District, and we have a great partnership going on with them. And that's a good thing. And I think that we just need to remain mindful that the Park District's responsibility is all of 98045, which is much larger than the city. And so our responsibility is to ensure that the city is appropriately balanced and represented within that, which things like some of their focus on the Riverfront Park, William Taylor Park, that's there, Ferguson. shot across the bat. Well, finishing that thought is that I'm a little disappointed that things like Riverfront Park and Tollgate Farmstead, the farmstead itself, continue to be pushed way out into the future. We seem to have been kicking those cans down the road in favor of the new things like, you know, new tenant trail head park. Well, that was a great opportunity. I don't know how we could have made a decision different. But those then knock other things that have been on there a long way down the road. So my shot across the bow in that one is one of the things I think we really need to get back up is items 3 and 4. Tanner Trail expansions, and the two of these really run together. Item 3 is starting at the roundabout, and through item number 4, which is going past Public Works. So this is running along North Bend Way, correct? And this is an item that I think is very important for us to get forward in the parks plan, because the reason number 4 didn't happen, it was intended to be part of the new city hall, and for budget reasons was dropped for the time being. But now we've moved, you know, or shortly will happen a year from now, we've moved City Hall out of the downtown core to this new location, and I think it's critical that we connect our pedestrians and bicycles to that new facility. So that's my comment. Those should not be at 2020.
Part of the anticipated years on this, you gave me their estimate for the projects that are funded by the bond should that pass. Beyond that, the other projects generally are a little further out in that we have to match it to park impact fee revenue. And we don't anticipate being back in the black on park impact fee revenue for another 2 or 3 years. We're still paying off the tenant trailhead park and some of the Tollgate or Edison Park improvements with park impact fee revenue. So
it's so easy.
Yeah, I just want to clarify a comment you made, Rob. You mentioned the park district, which
right.
has a larger,
right,
the 90045 versus
right.
the North Bend
Suits. Right.
Parks Commission. I mean, who kind of reviewed this, and who's recommend? Is this recommendation reflect a city North Bend Commission, or is this
so
a larger park district?
The park district put together their bond proposal based on the comments that they heard from their surveys and so forth.
Okay.
Then that went to our Parks Commission to say we also need to reflect, or we need to update our six-year plan if we're going to also contribute park impact fee revenue to some of the projects that they want to do. So our Parks Commission reviewed it and prioritized. And we did add one dissenting vote for that very reason, that one of the parks commissioners felt that we shouldn't just kind of buy their plan,
mm-hmm.
that our prioritization should be based on the prioritization that we've heard from our residents, pure and simple. The rest of the parks commissioners voted forward to reflect that this is a tremendous value in the public interest if we can go after this bond and fund parks to the city. So.
So I guess
my
question, and it kind of gets back to paragraph we're all talking about, is does the plan largely reflect the North Bend Commission approving the park district's plan, or
so
is this representing the North Bend Parks Commission's input into the plan? Because to me, those are two different
yeah.
things. And one
so
is
the Parks Commission has not approved the Parks District's plan. That's just the Parks Sideview Parks Commissioners have approved that to go out to voters.
Okay.
And then we took what their proposal is and looked at it in terms of our own public input that we've heard from our surveys and so forth, and said, do we agree? Do we want to move this onto our six-year plan? What you have here, the projects on this list, are the Parks Commission's recommendation.
Okay, which align with the park district's plan.
Yeah. There's a lot of projects on the park district's plan that are not in the city of North Bend and then therefore are not on this list.
I understand that part, but I was just trying to get a sense of did
50-50
our, yeah, did our, yeah, right, and did our commission influence that plan and this reflects their deliberation, or is this more our commission kind of trying to make the projects fit within what
yeah,
the,
it's more the latter.
District? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think that then opens up some more policy consideration for us as opposed to just kind of rubber stamping
yeah.
what the Parks Commission has done. Because
mm-hmm.
that is part of our purview too, is the policy piece of it. So I got what you were saying verbally and then what was in that paragraph, but to me, kind of gets back to the point that Dick made it. I think there's more work that we can deliberation to put in here and not just defer to Parks Commission's recommendation because mm-hmm. it's influenced by yet another body. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. On table five, Mike, are all those numbers, are they present net value or their future values?
Those are the estimates in current value. So the estimates from the SciView bond projects are directly from their consultants generating the cost estimates.
So all, even up to 2024, that is present value today?
Present value, yeah. And those are very rough estimates. So Riverfront Park improvements, that is a big unknown in terms of what that will include. So we've estimated high on that. The ultimate project will probably be in my estimate will probably be less than that because we'll reduce the scope and use the funds that we have available.
On the side, just pull fun at the numbers. It was easy to do. You should be having future values on these for planning purposes. You can't use present values for 5 years out. Not this market.
I guess I would say all the CIPs I've worked on, and there have been dozens of them, we always use current values. Because otherwise you're trying to predict in the future. This is just for
it's
initial
just a,
plans
yeah.
purposes.
It's
the
a
dollar values
tool.
Are going to change. It's based on a usually very rough scope of work. I mean, I don't know how much work their consultant did, but usually you don't have that much work. You're just trying to say, how much is a square foot of asphalt for a trail
mm-hmm.
cost, and what's the length of the trail, and how much the drainage costs, et cetera. So, I mean, I understand your point, but I have never seen it done that way.
And there's usually contingency put into the estimates
yeah.
as well.
I have a couple of comments on the table. One is, you know, in yellow, I did receive a mailer and I completed an online survey. This group isn't based on. I remember the survey though, there was no room for like a suggested other area, and I didn't like that at all. So I voted probably for all these that are proposed, but it was very narrow-minded. That's really interesting that it's coming out this way and others are wrong. So I would say yes, it was probably the public's opinion, but the public only had a few options. So I don't know if you remember that. You took that same survey, but it's not that I don't support trails, but I don't think that it didn't give all the recreation opportunities out there. So that's just a comment that I was surprised that at the end it wasn't. Is there anything else?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't there before. I mean, I don't have the survey information.
And that's why there's some projects on here that are not funded by SciView that the Parks Commission really wanted to put on. SciView wasn't interested in the spray park idea, but the Parks Commission felt that that was a strong community preference, so they put it on the list here.
There was one like that we had before on the disc golf park. So I want to see that.
Yeah, that's still on our 20-year list. Parks Commission just considered the you can only do so many projects,
it
and
was
that wasn't
on,
considered.
It was on a five-year list, and now it's not even on a five-year
right.
list.
Right.
Could you get us the 20-year
I can.
List as reference?
Yeah. Oh,
the 20-year is the narrative. So that's what he's saying. That's anything.
If you want the
list form would be nice.
But I don't have a list form of the 20-year.
Yeah.
But it's.
This is what I printed off because I was trying to remember to do this. This was November 2015. So my comment on smaller projects is that there's a cost and a benefit. And some of these are really high cost projects. Like I know you just put in a valuable bike park in there that maybe we didn't even pay a lot for or anything because of volunteer hours and things. Mm-hmm. But we're going to spend $200,000 on lighting for that. So that's a very specific activity that's already established. Yet we can't spend, I think we have $20,000 for this dog park. So to me, all these big ticket items, just totally disregarding the smaller ones. I mean, everything on here, what's the smallest thing on here? $60,000 for, and I don't even see how this is, I guess it's capital improvement. Most things are related to recreation. It's for an outdoor event plaza, garden, a commercial kitchen. But primarily, just the everything's like $200,000 or more. So I think removing lower ticket items is the wise thing.
But is this something that, as budgets come in, that you guys can fit smaller drops into?
I think it's not on here. So.
Okay.
The disc golf did happen at E.J. Roberts. Started to happen.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah, this the other one was a disc golf course from Meadowbrook Farm.
Oh, okay.
And part of the Parks Commission's consideration on that is there's no one to manage that disc golf course right now. So the Meadowbrook Farm Association doesn't have the capacity to be doing the level of maintenance that's necessary for that. So until we have a driver on that, it's not ready to be built.
So I think as property becomes available, is the idea we had before. The tenant trailhead before is even called that was a possibility. I think competing activities kind of erase that option.
Mm-hmm.
There's talk of the Cascade Golf Course being purchased. That's a huge piece of land.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be others. So I think removing it, you're saying, not out of the options would be fair.
The point of which, to your opening comments, I think it's 9 o'clock, and I think we're about to wrap up. But
so your next meeting, you'll have the Parks Commissioners, or hopefully most of them here as well. I think that can provide some good cross-pollination of ideas, and you'll understand more of the Parks Commission's consideration of all of the projects and kind of their recommendation. So you mentioned, though, I'm not sure if I'm understanding your comment. Do you want to see the existing six-year plan? I can provide that to you. Okay. It was just
probably online, right?
It is. It was too difficult to provide in redline format because you start getting in a table just all this mess everywhere.
That's so bad.
Okay.
Well, I don't have some evidence from the top here. Do you want to bring up the procedures change? We can extend this, or we can just go a few minutes and talk about it.
It's up to you guys.
Just as far as what the process is. So I think how it's supposed to work, the following procedures, that at 9 o'clock, it's just be a motion
by a majority.
Yeah, approval to extend the past. Mm-hmm. So just to give a backstory to some of our office before we started, we didn't have any procedures or updated procedures through the majority of time in the house here. We just updated them at the end of last year to say 9 p.m. And I didn't even notice the detail that said there had to be a motion and had to be approved. Because that really wasn't it was kind of almost like for us, okay, instead of going to 10:30, it's going to be a check, like it'd be about 9:30. And it was like Gary didn't ever check in. So I was nervous about it as well. And so I think it's probably a good idea to just figure out how we can go from just 7 to 9. Think of what Gary wanted to do. We don't want a situation to deal with where people leave. We still have to have the quorum of 4, otherwise then we all have to. So I think if we just manage to do this as best we can, 7 to 9, but if we do go over time, we need a formal extension.
Okay.
And also, I've seen this happen with city councils before, mm-hmm. where they have a similar rule, and if somebody does make a motion, it helps to say, you know, oh, I move that we extend the meeting until 9:15,
exactly.
Rather than just, let's meet however long it takes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there can be another motion. If you get to 9:15 and you need another 15 minutes, somebody can make another motion. Yeah. I think that helps, and I appreciate your meeting management. This meeting, I thought it was really good, and you got a lot accomplished in a very short period.
Definitely. Yeah, the other items were we provided you the calendar.
Still a lot of work ahead.
Yeah, there's job security there for you guys. And then we just wanted to let you know that we put out the notice, the annual docket, and we haven't received any yet.
If the planning commissioner wants something considered, do we fill out a docket?
Yes, but there are additional code requirements now, so you have to go into the code and make sure it's a complete docket request. Got a little meatier in the request. And then, did we have an update? So for the CR,
cottage residential to low density residential. So you recall you made your recommendation on that to not recommend a change on that. We brought that forward to council committee, and they do want to still bring it forward to full council consideration. So we will see what happens.
If I recall, they're bringing it forward with no recommendation of the law.
Yeah.
They're just simply passing our work on to full council.
And your recommendations for denial, so we'll see what happens with council. The other one, the landscape regulations, we're still working in committee with that, with Community Economic Development Council Committee. They've taken your recommendation pretty much as is, except for one section they want to add into it, which is a kind of a frontage entry area landscape requirement for subdivisions. So the idea is, as you look at like Cedar Falls subdivision, there's a little bit of a buffer between the subdivision and the street at the entrance there. So doing something similar with subdivisions that are over 20 lots, that's the current proposal for that, their consideration. And you have to provide a minimum of 3,000 square feet and then up to 20,000 square feet, the area being 1.5% of the area of the subdivision. It's tied to be scaled. So it just provides a little bit of a softer entry.
I reacted like that, but then tell them the example that you provided, because I read that.
Yeah, so Cedar Falls, you're familiar with it as you drive down Cedar Falls Web. It's got two entry tracts right at the entrance there, and that turns out to be 1.4% of the area of the subdivision.
So, actually, is what that developer chose to do on their own without both
segments.
Yeah.
And they were probably at 9. Yeah. We require 5% open space, and I think that development was about 9-something%.
That's what I'm wondering if.
Yes.
Because I think as an open space, though, it's not great because it's right by the road.
Right. No.
But.
And it doesn't. It wouldn't have counted to meet their 5%.
That's what I was saying.
Because they had it through the parks.
But
their total.
I
figured
it in there quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no trails or active recreation.
But you can't see it in there.
Yeah.
I think that's what all of this is concerned. Just the drive lines.
The look from the road. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Great. Anything else from anyone?
Wi-Fi access. I've noted this a couple of times that even our open network requires a code. So it would be nice if we could get that code.
Yeah.
Because there were times when I would like to look something up when we're talking about an item.
That's
true. Nice.
Maybe we can work on that.
Wi-Fi instead of
in the meeting.
At one point there was a little directive.
We have an open network. It, accordingly, but when you click on it, it comes up and asks for a password.
It's not an easy thing to use either. It's not just get the password and you're good. It's that password is created individually for each one of them.
Even some are open.
Well, the city officials.
We'll ask again. I'll play dumb and just be like, this is what we're
doing.
How do we make it happen?
I thought about it.
It's the booth.
Yeah, sometimes it would be this.
So moved.
Second.
Second, I appreciate it.